Resorts World Catskills, where luxury and excitement are so close by. Catch all the sports action and so much more at Resorts World Catskills. Dial *RWCAT to learn more.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Essentially, whatever in the world of sports you want to talk about, and sometimes we do go off the rails with other things in the world, not just in the world of sports, but you know, stuff that goes on in your life. You want to talk about it? You can get us right here. Again, 800-919-3776. Get me on Twitter at Alan Hahn, A-L-A-N-H-A-H-N. And just so everybody that knows, we're pulling the curtain back for a second. Brian is on the ones and twos today, and he is, there's a immense pressure on him right now to come through. Because normally we come up with a set list and we get an idea what kind of music we want to play throughout the show, because we like to combine sports talk and really good music and discuss both. And we could not figure out this morning what we could not get on the same page of what we want to listen to, what we want to hear.
J-Lo.
So see, and Brian's all about J-Lo right now. And now explain yourself, Brian. Why J-Lo today?
Because we're trying to convince Manny Machado to come here.
So by playing J-Lo, that's what you want to do. Now, you understand that you don't have to convince him to come here, right? The convincing has to be Brian Cashman and whether or not it makes sense for the Yankees to make that deal happen. But, all right, so we'll see how Brian does. And that's – I'll almost – you know what? Here's what we'll do. If you don't like the music Brian's playing, I think the complaint department will be open.
Be hilarious.
And you will be able to change this throughout the show. You can control it. If you're saying to yourself, you know what? I don't like the DJ.
Tweet me music at the Good Vibe 365.
That's it. At the Good Vibe 365. And you can, do you want to take requests? Is this TRL now? We're going to do this?
Sure.
All right. That's what we're going to do today. All right. But we begin on the, since we mentioned Machado, let's begin on the Yankee front. Now they get the loss last night, but, a really good note that Ty, stole from ESPN stats and information. I wanted to give him credit for it, but he correctly, identified the actual resource. It's amazing how last night was the 75th time this season the Yankees and Red Sox played on the same day, only the sixth time they both lost on the same day. And so it ends a 10-game winning streak for the Red Sox, who there is this sense, I don't want to say inevitability, but it does feel like all of a sudden they're kind of pulling, look at the standings, they're not pulling away, but this run that they've had right here has been, you know, the 10 straight wins where the Yankees have sort of, I mean, the Yankees have played fine. They've been good. You know, it's not like they 10 and, what did they won? 6 of 10? I mean, you know, the Yankees have been fine. But it's pretty incredible to think you're starting to get a little bit of distance now between these two teams. 3.5 games right now. There's a part of the schedule coming up, and we've talked about this. September is going to be like playoffs, because winning this division is so important. And when you consider the fact that the Yankees and Red Sox play each other twice in the last, I believe, 2 weeks of the season, and the final three games are at Fenway of the season, that's going to be a playoff series. If you're still within three games, that's a playoff series. And that could really mess you up going into the playoffs because of how important that series could be, setting up your pitching, not really getting rest. And then the loser of that series, let's just say that's for the division, well, now you're talking about having to play in the extra play-in game, wild card game. Now you got to use some more pitching. And then game one of the ALDS almost becomes like, you know, Sonny Gray and Prey. You know, that's essentially what happens, which is why last night's game also continues to – there's no panic button here, but there has to be some alarms going off right now. And you know there are. Brian Cashman is not sitting back saying, hey, well, you know, he's not Kevin Bacon. You know, all is well. He's not doing that because it's clear that they need pitching. Now, is it one pitcher or two? We don't know. I don't know if they're going to get two. It's very difficult to find two. But they definitely have to get one. And as we talked about the other night on my show, 7 to 10 weekdays, there could be this path to DeGrom or even Syndergaard. You saw him pitch last night. Looks like, okay, that he's back and now teams are going to start scouting him. And there are suggestions that as much as the Mets are hesitant to give up on DeGrom, to want to move DeGrom, the older of the two, there have been suggestions that the Mets might listen to offers for Syndergaard. At least listen. Because it sounds like they aren't even listening to offers for DeGrom. So fine. So what you saw last night with Domingo Herman and how he battled through, but it just obviously wasn't enough. The Knicks aren't going to win every game, especially against Cleveland. But that's one of those starts where as you watch, you just say to yourself, clearly they still need pitching. So when you look at the possibility of trying to get someone like a DeGrom at that level, let's just say that Snell, DeGrom, Syndergaard, someone at that level, you got to give to get, as we know. The best piece you possibly have is Andujar, because you could say you have depth there. And as we broke it down, if the path to getting one of those pitchers is getting Machado, this is how it would have to work. If you're moving, let's say Drury, let's say Herman, let's say some other, you know, pitcher, you know, some other player, maybe not a pitcher, but some other player in your farm system, but not high end, and you get the Orioles to bite, because Drury can play right away, and we know that he's dying to play right away. And the Orioles have to move Machado. They have to get something for him because he's walking, and everybody knows it. So if you make that move first, I think if the Yankees are in on Machado, it's because it's tethered to getting a starting pitcher. Because once you get Machado, you have your third baseman. Now Andujar becomes expendable. He becomes now a centerpiece of a package to get another pitcher. Now, the first question I have for you, if you're a Yankees fan, 800-919-3776, is when you think about how in the offseason you could have gotten Gerrit Cole for Andujar and Clint Frazier, and you see what he's done now with the Astros. Do you feel like that maybe they should, like, passing on that trade, was that a huge mistake? Was that a bigger mistake maybe than we thought? Because at the time it's like, no, that's way too much for him. But is that too much for him now? I mean, if you could do that deal, the Astros clearly aren't. But if you could do that deal right now, if you could make a trade for Gerrit Cole and you're giving up Frazier and Miguel Andujar, would you do it now? Because if you consider the state of your pitching, knowing what you know, Montgomery being out, you know, Sonny Gray, you don't know what to think of him. Now you're probably thinking, well, maybe you know what? That might have been a pretty good trade to make. So that's, as All-Star break is coming this weekend, to me, that is the biggest story with the Yankees is not if they get a pitcher, but when they get a pitcher, who is it going to be? You know, like who is it going to be and what kind of an impact it's going to have? Last year was all about Sonny Gray. Last year was about how Gray fits, you know, younger pitcher, and he fits right in exactly what they need. And he has been a bust. In fact, like his performance against the Orioles on Thursday, was it Thursday? It was Wednesday. My God, week's going fast. That performance, was that a good thing or a bad thing? How crazy is it to think that as well as he pitched, it might have actually been the worst case scenario? Because it leaves you in that, like kind of stuck in the middle again. Like you don't know what to trust. You don't know what to believe. Honestly, if you look at it on the box score, you think, oh, good. Maybe he's finding himself. But the problem is he's had starts like that littered throughout a season of trash. And that's the problem. You don't know what to trust. Because if that's an indication that maybe he's starting to figure it out, how much time do you give him before you have to make a decision on a trade? Because that's the guy you've been hoping would have filled that space last year. But now he becomes a guy that you can't trust at all. So that start may not have been such a positive. It was a positive for him. But for the Yankees, it might have made the picture less clear than you thought it might have been. Again, 800-919-3776 is the number. We'll get into a lot of stuff today. Obviously, the Yankees are the big story right now. Ben McAdoo started opening his mouth and started talking. And Paul Schwartz of the Post had it first the other night, Thursday night. And it was, you know, some of the stuff he said was interesting. What he said about the Giants is very interesting. He literally, without naming names, throwing people under the bus left and right. I mean, the stuff he said about Flowers, we'll revisit all that stuff and how interesting it was that he agreed with the Giants for passing on Sam Darnold at number 2, not taking a quarterback in the first round, completely agreed. And I mean, did he not just completely take a sky dumpty on the Jets for taking Sam Darnold? I mean, he dumped water all over that, and, you know, but he did it subtly. It's sort of like the backhanded compliments that end up, when you read it twice, you realize, no, that's actually not a nice thing, what he just said. That's not a positive thing. That's not encouraging at all. So what Ben McAdoo had to say, and I guess it was, let's start it with this. Do you even care what he had to say? Well, we'll tell you what he said, and then you can react accordingly. NBA stuff for sure to get to. I know a lot of people know me through the Knicks, so you're going to want to ask me about the Summer League and, you know, the positive vibes coming out of Summer League, coming out of Vegas for the Knicks, and that's a rarity. The fact that they even have a first-round pick playing in the Summer League, that doesn't happen all the time. A lot of times they got them wrapped in bubble wrap. Well, this year, Kevin Knox opened a lot of eyes, not just with the Knicks, but around the league, as far as the number 9 pick being one of the top players, the top prospects out of this draft class already. But the guy that might have stolen all the headlines and stole the show was a guy that wasn't even taken in the first round.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
You could question whether Boone left Ermahn in. He definitely didn't have it, but he hasn't lately. Like, he'll still get you strikeout numbers, but, you know, you can't continue with him. You can, this is a younger pitcher. He's showing you a little something. Probably needs a third pitch, but right now, this is all they've got. This is who they're putting out right now. Don't expect to sweep the Indians.
But it's just one pitcher you need, not two.
You're trusting CC Sabathia. That's what you're doing, right?
I'm putting CC at 4. Because right now, to me, what you have is Seve at 1,
mm-hmm.
Blank at 2,
right.
Tanaka at 3, right. Sabathia at 4.
Right.
So if you get Blank at 2...
And it was supposed to be Sonny Gray, which he's not.
Oh.
You've completely demoted him now to 5,
no.
Right?
Come on. And like Gordon Sonny talked Gray about
is your,
this.
Sonny Gray is your game 4 long reliever.
Yes.
Is that what he is now?
Yes. Yeah. If Sonny Gray is in the game, it's a bad sign. But... about the Orioles.
Sonny Gray is when you're down 8.
Yes.
In game 3.
He's chasing Shreve in the postseason.
Wow. Yeah.
But
is anyone ever excited when Chasen Shreve comes in a game? Like,
no.
Other than his family.
Is
anyone else going?
Maybe his family isn't excited because maybe
anyone
his
else
family's
going,
Yankee
Chasen
fan.
Shreve's in the game, guys. We're good. No. Chasen Shreve is like basically saying, you can now go to your cars.
Yes. You can now leave the stadium as you proclaimed a couple weeks ago. Even though
the 4 train will be here in 2 minutes.
The Yankee, Aaron Boone doing guys a favor.
Actually, how great would that be if all of a sudden the PA at the Yankee Stadium is like, now coming in to pitch for the Yankees, Chasen Shreve and the 4 train will be here in 2 minutes.
But yeah, you need two.
The Stampede.
You need your number 2 starter. I don't think you got to go out there and get 2 stars. Not that it's likely or anything, but you only need 1. Because if you're getting Tanaka, if you're getting anything close to the Tanaka we saw in the postseason last year.
Now, can I throw that Tanaka caveat in and say that as good as he was last year in the postseason, like he does look like a big game pitcher. Like Tanaka has that aura about him. He does have that alpha dog kind of personality, which, you know, he brought that over with him. But we also know that he's fragile. So if he can't, like, don't you feel like you sort of want some insurance there with him or no?
Well, I gave him a month off because apparently running 90 feet in a straight line was too much to ask. So you blow out both your hamstrings.
If I'm an opponent, I'm bunting on him now.
He's an excellent fielder.
Can't run.
He's an excellent fielder, but
he's a good fielder. But I want to keep him running because those hammies will tighten up again. Anybody who knows, anybody's an athlete out there, you know this. In a season, once the hamstring injury or hamstring issue comes in, it doesn't leave until the off season. It's always a lingering issue. That I can promise you. It doesn't just go away. Hamstrings are one of the worst things to deal with in season.
You do feel comfortable with him at 3, though.
Okay, comfortable. I'll give you comfortable.
I feel okay.
Okay. But you have to admit, what I said earlier, the Gerrit Cole thing, if you could do the trade for Gerrit Cole now.
but in retrospect.
And Duhar
it
and
looks,
Frazier.
It looks no, like that in retrospect.
If the Astros said to you, you know, we need a third baseman, they don't obviously, but if they did, right, and they said, let's that deal that you could have done with the Pirates, we'll do that. Did you do it?
There's something else the Astros have to include in that deal to make it sweeter.
Still, so you still don't think that's a good enough?
No, if
you're getting Manny Machado for Drury and whatever, right? And you can get Gerrit Cole for the same again, Frazier and Andujar. Are you doing it?
Are they also sending the Pintar? Because then I'm all over.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
If
so
not,
you're going there.
Then I think Garrett Cole is going to be the Garrett Cole of
They're
last year.
One of the
year.
Best pitching staffs in baseball, and you're going to start accusing them of cheating?
Yeah, it's something.
Who's their pitching coach, Michael Pineda?
It's weird how guys just go there, and all of a sudden their careers are rejuvenated. Like, and then guys you've never heard of, Charlie Morton's now in an All-Star game.
He owns it's a steakhouse, doesn't he?
Justin Verlander, on his way to retirement. Mm-hmm. Now he's probably back to being one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Houston
it's
is
so
the fountain
weird.
Of youth.
It's
the
so
fountain
weird.
Of Houston. The fountain of youth. There must be something there in the water. I don't know.
Oh, but maybe they just, it's, yeah, or, maybe it's just the
or
ballpark.
Or as Ty says, maybe they just cheat.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
That's right. Hey, that's the other part of it. Until you get caught, it ain't really cheating. 800-919-3776. We'll talk some Mets because of what you saw in Noah Syndergaard's performance last night and how the fact that he shows up and is able to pitch off of being out for a while with, what was it, a finger issue? Does he now become, you know, we mentioned this. A lot of Met fans mad about the idea of the Yankees being able to offer to me again, it's a you can't say no to this kind of offer to the Mets for DeGrom. If you're the Mets, this gives you that reset button quickly. This allows you to reset. And you can't use your emotions in deals like this. No, but it's DeGrom and I don't want to see him there. You might not want to see him in pinstripes, but you know what you don't want to see? A desolate farm system. That's what you really, like, what would you prefer? Would you prefer DeGrom miserable? Look at him. Has he smiled in 2 months? I don't think he has. It's like, do you prefer to see him miserable and on your bad team and you still have nobody in Vegas? Or would you prefer, all right, for whatever, I got to put up with him just like Doc Gooden and, you know, and Daryl Strawberry. I had to see that. Like, all right, I'll deal with that, but at least I know I'm resetting my franchise. I'm getting healthy again. Now I've got some guys that can play. I got Rosario and Andujar on the left side of my infield. I like that. I got a guy like Sheffield who can be a starter for me. I like that. And then maybe they give me, you know, Red Rocket, Clint Frazier. I like that. I mean, if you can get some players that'll help reset for you, which emotion would you prefer? We're all miserable. I got to be miserable. So DeGrom's got to be miserable too. He's not allowed to be happy because I can't be happy. Like that's dumb. How about reset? Just reset your franchise. Give me another team that can help you reset your franchise better than the Yankees can. You can't. I'm waiting. 800-919-3776. Go ahead. Go ahead and try it because there's not another offer you can get that'll be better than what the Yankees possibly could offer you. But that's fine. If you want to be that hard-headed about it, and it could start with Wilpon, fine. I mean, Thursday night we had Met fans calling from Citi Field during the game. That's how bored they were. They weren't even watching. They were watching the game, but they were listening to my show. And they were calling in about this, and some of them even said, you know what, I'd do it. And then the best part is that some of them said, I'm not giving you DeGrom, but what about Syndergaard? And I'm thinking, okay, my work is done here. If I get you to pick up the phone, you might say no to DeGrom, but at least you'll talk about Syndergaard. And then I watched him last night, and I'm thinking, I'll take it. I'll do it. So I'm telling you, I don't think it's inevitable because there's too much emotion involved, and emotion ruins good business, always. Look at the history. Emotion always ruins good business. But if we can remove the emotion, there could be a deal where these two franchises actually help each other. And maybe for a change, they're both healthy at the same time. Because it's only been about, what, 20 years since they've both been healthy at the same time? Maybe 18 years? 800-919-3776. Let's grab some calls here, beginning with Nick in Queens. What's up, Nick?
Hi, how you doing, Alan?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, Mitchell Robinson.
Yes, sir.
What do you think of his upside? And do you think he'll be on the Knicks roster? And do you think the Knicks could sneak in the playoffs in a weak Eastern Conference?
Wow. Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it. I love how we get right into the Knicks, and I love it. And then we'll talk. I said the buffet's open. Mitchell Robinson, yeah. He's the guy I was referencing when I said the Knicks had a top 10 pick, and yet the guy who really stole all the attention in the headlines is Mitchell Robinson, the guy they took in the second round. 7-footer. He's got unbelievable defensive instincts, great athlete, putting up double doubles. His numbers in the summer league. And again, and by the way, I'll say this too. You want to come out, oh, typical Han, talking about how good the Knicks are. It's summer league. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah, it does. You know why it means something? Because look in the last couple of years. How would, other than Porzingis, How did Knicks first round picks look in summer league? If Nielkin didn't even play last year in the summer league, I mean, there's been years. You know, Gallinari got hurt like the first game. You know, there's been years where everybody else is all the buzz and all the rage coming out of summer league, and the Knicks, it's like, you know, who are they showing you? You can't even pronounce half the names on the team. So to the fact that this year they have a guy who, like Kevin Knox, who's fourth in scoring in the summer league, really third because Monk only played like one game. You know, he and Josh Hart, I mean, Knox and Josh Hart were just tearing up summer league, tearing it up. And then you have Mitchell Robinson. He averaged 13, 10, and I mean, how many, four blocks a game. That dude was balling. Second round pick. So, you know, am I saying like, you know, he just asked, are they going to make the playoffs? I find it hard to even consider playoffs right now for this is going to be a very young team, and there's still a ton of questions. So let's just dial it back and just tell yourself this. If you're a Knicks fan, you can at least enjoy this team because they'll be young. You have a good coach, and there'll be a lot of emphasis on development. You go from there. And whatever happens at the end of the year happens. I told you already, a lot of you are going to be mad because they're going to get to March, and they might actually start improving, especially if Porzingis comes back by then, which I think he will, and he'll play the rest of the season. And you'll be mad because they'll be winning games late in the year because of the progress and their development. And that's when you'll get mad, because fans always get mad when you win games late in the season, which I understand what you're trying to say about tanking. I hate it, but I understand it. But that's going to happen this year. I'm predicting it.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
So Chase Utley announced he's going to retire at the end of the season. And it's really the first thing I thought of was not necessarily, you know, Chase Utley, is he a Hall of Famer? But how about when it comes to New York sports? Chase Utley, where do you rank him among the most hateable opponents? Because obviously for the Mets, you hate him. Like with a passion. You always hated him. As a Philly, as a Dodger, didn't matter what he did in the World Series. But is he a hateable player? And where does he rank hateable players of all time when it comes to New York? I mean, you know, when you think about hateable New York opponents, what's the first? All right, guys, you guys jump in on this, Brian and Ty. Who is the, when I say hateable, the most hateable New York opponent in sports history, who would you say it was?
Oh, come on. TB12.
Tom Brady. Hateable? Giants fans don't hate him.
Well, as a Jet fan, for me, it's Tom Brady.
I mean, that's less than half of the population. Would you say that Reggie Miller would be higher on the list?
Yes.
I would think Reggie Miller would be higher on the list.
Chipper Jones.
The weird thing is I almost feel like Mets fans don't hate him as much as he's just like that. You love to hate him. Whereas I think Utley, like, I think I literally have seen people spit on the ground after saying his name if you're a Mets fan. Now, again, if you're a Yankees fan, you're completely apathetic to Chase Utley. Completely apathetic.
Well, that
I actually like him.
That almost wasn't the case. In 2009, he destroyed them in the World Series.
That's a fair point. But
obviously,
didn't really
I'm changing history now.
Yeah, but it
because
didn't
the same thing can be said about Tom Brady. Like, if instead of Eli beating him twice,
right,
they go 1-1.
Yeah,
it's a different story.
So let's power rank if we can. We'll come up with, write the names down, and we'll power rank them. So we'll
Pedro.
Get some calls. We'll get some. Pedro. We'll get some. We'll take calls and tweets at Alan Hahn on with Chase Utley in mind. You know, the most hateable New York sports opponents. And if you give me some names, it'll come up some why. And then maybe by the end of the show, we'll power rank and we'll see where Chase Utley ranks among those 10. 800-919-3776 is the number. So we'll do that the rest of the show. We'll take Jimmy from Staten Island next, though. What's up, Jimmy?
How you doing, buddy? Great show.
Thanks.
Listen, I got to tell you, I mean, I understand the way baseball is now, but I'm going to say something, and if you give me just a minute, I'll explain. Last year, Judge killed us against Houston, and I'm going to tell you why. He's not a second hitter. I know what the numbers say. I understand all of that. I'm going to give you my Yankee lineup, and if I'm wrong, I hope Cashman's listening or somebody from the organization, because mine don't lose, okay?
All right.
I'm going to give you my lineup. Here it is. And I'll tell you why. If you got a question, just tell me.
Go for it.
I'm going to have Didi hit first because he sprays the ball around and he can drop a bunt down. I'm going to hit Gardner second because he's gritty, stays out of the double play, okay? And he could drop a bunt down. Third, I'm going to hit Stanton, especially in the second half of the season, because if he heats up, that's where he should be hitting. Fourth, I'm going to hit Bird to break up Stanton and Judge, who's going to hit fifth. Hitting sixth, I have Andujar. Okay? Andujar is the sixth hitter, followed by Hicks, who's a switch hitter in center field with some speed. Okay? Followed by, who am I missing now? The other three. The last hitter is going to be Tyler Wade at second because he's speed. He brings you back to the top.
What happened to Torres?
Gentlemen. Well, Torres, when he comes back, will change the lineup. He's not back yet.
Well, I thought we were just talking in generalities. Okay. So, okay.
Right now in the second half, the Yankees are 30 games over, whatever. They could be a much better team. That's what's so funny is they're 30 games over. They even could be better than that. But yes, the Yankees have to do three things, okay? You have to have a lineup that, number one, has power, and they have that. Number two, you have to have speed. And believe it or not, whatever that other gentleman was talking about, Gardner, he doesn't know what he's talking about. We have that, okay? Because Wade and Gardner could fly. And number three, you need to put an offensive lineup together that's not only going to have that, but it's going to make the other team hard to defend. When Gardner hits second, who can pull the ball, drop a bunt down, and has that kind of speed, it makes whoever's on first easier to steal second base and opens up a hole. Because that's what you got to do with these guys. They're out of position.
Right. Jimmy, I love the time you've put into this because obviously you put the thought in, and I always respect people that put that kind of thought in. What you gave me, your lineup is if you were a manager in 1987. Yes, you know what I mean? Like if you were the manager in 1987, this makes sense.
You get what I'm saying, right?
And I'm not saying it to disparage what you were doing here. I'm saying it because the game, and you said it too, you acknowledged it, the game is just different now where you want Judge getting as many at-bats as you possibly can get him. Because the probability of him hitting a home run is so much higher than anybody else on the team.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Dave. You remember the Houston series last year? Other than the one game that he had a decent game, they put that ball on the outside corner, the guy couldn't touch it, and that's how you pitch him.
I know.
Okay? As far as the Yankees, is he the best hitter on the team? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think he's as powerful.
But it's not about John, it's not about that. It's about how many at bats he gets and the probability of him hitting a home run. That's where the game is right now. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's where the game is right now. It's simply about how his percentage of hitting a home run, the probability, is higher than even Stanton, anybody on the team. And so therefore you get him the most at-bats. That's the thinking now. You could tell me that it's flawed. It's a flawed theory, and you just broke down the reasons why you have your lineup the way you'd have it, and all of it made sense to me, but that's not how the game is today. 800-919-3776. Matt's in Tom's River. What's up, Matt?
What's up, man? I don't really get to talk to you. I work during the day. I usually get off work right before you come on.
Okay.
But,
Matt, I do have a podcast, you know. I'm not about excuses, brother.
You know what? You got that. But I preferred it when you were on with the guys during the day, but you do a great job by yourself. But anyway, I digress.
Okay.
About the Knicks. Now, listen, you got a couple callers that, I respect. They're great perspective, despite the older guy, the guy Johnson Freehold that's kind of in the middle. I'm about to be 33 years old. I'm a diehard, Yankees, Giants, Knicks. But I fell in love with the Knicks. You got to think, I'm about 10 years old during the heyday. So, this was everything. So, they got me, and then they bamboozled me for the last 20 years. But that's the whole point of this is, as you know, we have all kind of had these false hopes, and this could be the time. This one going ahead, and we get Phil, and Phil gets it. But you know what? And I know it's been said at those times as well that this feels a little different, and we said it every time. But if there's a way to differentiate that this time, it does feel a little different only because it feels like they obviously – early reports got the right kid where they were drafted, and they didn't move up. It seems like it's an A-plus move. Now, whatever they do this year, you go either way. I would love to see the progress and have the faith in this front office that if we are thinking in the same area or if we're in some crazy way make the 8th seed or worth the very bat in the lottery, that they'll get some value there as well. Or if it kind of goes south, but we see some glimpses, we get Porzingis back at the end, and we get a high lottery pick, either way, it could be great. And at the end of next year, you'll have the following year, the expiring Noah contract. Maybe something can be worked out with Tim, and instead of one spot, you could get 1¾ of a max, or maybe even 2 maxes on top of your young talent. It really does feel a little bit different.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, look, you know, and I think that's exactly what I think you focus on as a fan. And thanks for the call, Matt, and for breaking that down. And that's what I'm trying. What you're saying is what I'm just trying to tell Knicks fans. Is this summer league, which just ended yesterday, and they got the win, and you know, Knox played great again, and Mitchell Robinson put up huge numbers again, and he averaged 4 blocks a game in the summer league. And you can say, well, Alan, it's just summer league. And I'll remind you that there have been past summer leagues where things have not looked good and you've all flipped out. So you're not allowed to criticize when they're bad if you're not going to give them credit when they're good. I'm not letting you do it. You know, it's fair to criticize when they're bad, and when Neil Akeem doesn't play at all last year in the summer league. This year he played, what did he play, 2 games? I mean, that's a problem. I'm sorry, it's a problem. But everything else, it's almost looks like they're making the right decisions. They're taking their time with it. They're going through, you know, the way you're supposed to do it. And how this feels different, as you were just explaining, and I'll explain it too, is that there was a time in 2005 where the Knicks had 3 first-round picks, if you remember. It was Channing Frye, David Lee, and Nate Robinson. And, you know, it's 3 talented young players who all had long careers. And then they also had, you know, they were building with younger players, and Isaiah was trying to do it that way, but Isaiah's method was flawed because he was giving up unprotected first-round picks for young players who were already in the league that what needed to get paid, and that was a mistake. This is different, and this feels different because these are your own players. These are guys you drafted or found. You know, Trey Burke's a guy that you gave him a second chance, and what did he turn it into? I'm pretty excited about that. Tim Hardaway Jr., for all people who hate the contract, I don't care. He is a draft pick that you made originally, and he comes back on a big contract, but he is a guy you need in your – you need a guy like that. That guy's a hard worker. He's a standard setter. Is he a great player? No, he's not a great player, but you need dudes like this. I'm telling you. I'm telling you behind the scenes, this is a guy you need around. You know, Porzingis is your pick. These are your picks. This kid, Alonzo Trier, you found. That guy's a player. He's going to be in the league. So that's why it feels different. That's why it's okay to start feeling like, all right, I'm paying attention now because, and that's what it is. I tell the Knicks this too. You've got people's attentions now. Don't screw it up. Like, you know, stay with the plan now. Don't get that easy button thinking, hey, everybody's excited about us. What if we made this one big trade and we could, no, don't do that. Just stick with the plan. This is what people have been waiting for. So don't start predicting playoffs and what can they be and all. Don't start anticipating that just yet. It's in the slow cooker right now, right? There's no microwave here. It's in the slow cooker right now. Give it time. It's going to pay off. It has to pay off because the other way wasn't working.
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.
You know, most hateable New York opponents as Chase Utley, as you just heard there, announces retirement coming up at the end of the season. And, you know, when it comes, you can discuss whether or not he's Hall of Fame material. I just want to discuss what he means in New York history because you know how much Mets fans just absolutely loathe this guy. And so where, you know, give me some other names. We've gotten a few so far already. Seti Raymond says John Rocker. Ross says Pedro Martinez. LT and several others have said Reggie Miller, which I said, which to me, that's a given. I wonder when we power rank them, I mean, where are you is Reggie at the very top? So the hardest thing to do is you're not going to get a unified title here. There's no unified title because a guy like, let's say, I mean, I guess John Rocker, because of stuff he said about New York back in those days, I guess everybody in New York hated him. And they ended up, what did he pitch for the Ducks or something like that? But, you know, when it comes to and Chase Utley, I don't know how much the Yankee fans really care. When it comes to Tom Brady, Giants fans certainly could care less. They beat him twice. What do you care about Tom Brady? You know, I mean, yes, Jets fans hate him. Giants fans, whatever, don't hate him. So it'll be hard to get a unified title here where it's everyone agrees, absolutely hate that guy. Hate him. Islander fans have given me Dale Hunter, and there's definitely reason to hate Dale Hunter. I personally would throw Darcy Tucker in on that one. There's others you can come up with, but I think those two are definitely leading the way. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting list to try to put together, and we'll do it in the name of Chase Utley. Can we find a unified title for most hated opponent in New York sports history? Because, again, Pedro, Yankee fans hate Pedro. Pedro played for the Mets. Do you hate Pedro if you're a Mets fan? Of course not. What do you care? So it'll be tough to find a unified title, but let's try to do it. 800-919-3776. We get back to the calls in a moment. That'll be today's Around the Diamond, brought to you by Volvo of Glen Cove. And you know what? What we'll do around the diamond is a pretty interesting question that Justin in Roslyn has. So we'll actually use a caller for this one. And Justin in Roslyn has a question that I think is an interesting one to ask when it comes to Bryce Harper.
Yes. Hello.
How you doing, Justin?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I need you to crank the energy up to about an 8 or 9 right now.
All right, I got you. So with the season that Bryce Harper is having, which is pretty bad to say the least, he's batting like .215, I would say, and combined with his like body language and his overall attitude and stuff, is he still
The team's .500 and they were supposed to be a division contender.
Yeah, they're bad right now. Is he still worth that $300, even $400 million that was being reported before the season started?
Yeah, they were talking almost, like last year I remember hearing things as ridiculous as $500, you know, like, you know, that's the stuff that gets stupid if you give him like a 15-year deal or whatever. Is Bryce Harper worth, let's just keep it at as conservative as we can, the $300 million. You're right about this season, but do you base it on this season? Just so for the record, he's batting .214 right now. The OPS is .836. He does have 23 home runs, however, and 53 RBI, and it just shows you again in today's game, 23 home runs, you know, is a pretty damn good pace. But is he marketable? See, if you're giving someone, it's a good question, because if you're giving someone that kind of coin, you're not paying. People need to understand this too. Max contracts, all that stuff. This is why things got stupid in sports, and there's a correction happening now. And you've seen it in baseball too. You've seen some, you know, pretty big names that aren't getting the numbers that they thought they'd get, and this is why. And thanks for the call, Justin, and thanks for the topic, because I think it's a good one. Here's the idea. You don't give that kind of money, the quan, to someone who isn't going to make some of that money back for you. Because you don't give it to some, like, see, that's where the Mets screwed up with Cespedes. Because Cespedes is a guy that, you know, when he's healthy, he can give you numbers that make him a superstar and he affects winning. He definitely affects winning. But is he marketable? Okay, maybe the canary yellow sleeve is marketable. But there's nothing about him, you know, his reluctance to speak publicly in English, which, you know, he struggles with English, that's fine. But if you're the Mets, that doesn't help you. You've got to have somebody that can be a face of the franchise kind of guy that you can use in, you know, in many different ways that you can make that money back. So, you know, there's things you have to understand that you can pay a guy for his talent on the field. Bryce Harper's a guy that, you know, he's the make baseball fun again guy. He's been rookie of the year. His numbers have been very, very good. Yes, his batting average this year is terrible, but he's still getting you 23 home runs. You know, is he affecting winning? Not this year, but you can argue he's one of the best players in baseball. I feel like you're seeing today in sports that you're not getting the teams that are as ready to give huge max contracts to people that they are not going to be able to, like, can I sell you off the field? Yeah, I think that's what's the most important thing. And it's not just about selling jerseys or selling tickets. It's more than that. It's, are you a guy I can put front and center of my, see, that's why, you know, David Wright was such an important figure, because you can do that. You could have done it. And obviously Jeter's another guy, that you could do that with, Those are the guys that make it worth it. You know, Trout is so good, but he's, you know, he's cardboard. You know, like, he's, that's what he is. And so it's hard to, they try to sell him, but he's so good that, you know, you want it, you obviously pay a guy like that. But Harper is a face of baseball. He's one of the faces of baseball. So you could make the marketing argument that, hey, you know what? We put him on our team. We pay him all this money, but we'll make that back. A-Rod was another guy. He was such a gigantic figure. Now, you could say that that money that the Rangers spent on him way back in the day, which sounded astronomical at the time, was, you know, it did not pay off for the Rangers. But it did pay off for the Yankees because he was a bigger-than-life superstar. And it was worth it to them to have a guy like that. He's a lightning rod. He's a, you know, he's an attraction. I think Harper is that kind of guy. I think he is an attraction. And so you will make that money back. All of it? No, you never make all the money back. But you will be able to justify a contract like that with a player like him more than you could for, again, I use Cespedes as the example because for the Mets, you know, how has that worked out? The fact that he's always hurt, that kills you. But all the other optics. I mean, is Bryce Harper going to show up in five different cars at spring training? Is Bryce Harper going to show up? Is Bryce Harper going to play golf in between games? And, you know, I mean, you know, he's a, the guy loves baseball.
He loves it so much, he hustles to first base on
the I knew that. I was waiting for that. This has been a bad year for him.
Terrible.
He looks, you know what? Who's more miserable, Bryce Harper or Jacob DeGrom?
Well, at least Jacob DeGrom is doing it in gracefully. Like, he might be miserable, but he's not showing it. Harper is, forget 1 foot out the door. He's got 2 feet out the door.
He looks like it, doesn't he?
And
he
at the end of the day, you talk about
he looks like
the
LeBron after game one.
Well, this is before or after he snuffed the whiteboard and broke his hand. But with Harper, don't at the end of the day you have to win?
Can you really put winning on one player in baseball?
Not that you want to put winning on one player in baseball, but when you're the
face. Their problem is they can't win in the playoffs. That's been their problem.
And he also struggles in the postseason. Like, mm-hmm. You look at his numbers, he hasn't been good. No, so it's not like he's raking and the team is losing in spite of that. He's contributing to their losing. They haven't gotten out the first round.
Just real quick, how old is he?
What is he going to be? He's 26 now?
Is he that old already?
He's 26. I believe he's going to be 27 next year.
Now, he's older than I thought he was. I didn't realize he was already
25.
Yeah, okay. I thought so. He's 25. Thank you.
Well, he'll be 26.
Speak with facts, please. He'll be 26 when the season starts next year, yes.
Yep.
All right. That's still, to me, very young. That's very young in baseball. So I am not ready, like, you know, but you can't deny what I just argued, that if you wanted to give him 300, if you were a team that needed somebody like this, you need a centerpiece. Okay. You're a team that's desperate for a centerpiece and he's willing to go to your team. It's worth it to you to give him $300 million if that's what it takes to get him.
No, it's not.
How is it not?
Because when has that ever worked out for any team? It didn't work out for the Mariners because they thought they were getting that in Robinson Cano. Okay. Hasn't worked out.
Once again, how is Robinson Cano a face of a franchise?
Well, that's what they thought they were getting, the face of a franchise.
But again, that's a bad business decision. I just explained why. That's a bad he's never been that personality.
And I get your point that this is kind of unique where you have one of the faces of baseball on the open market.
This is just like when is one of the best, you know, quarterbacks in football ever available in free agency? You know, this is that kind of an argument. You know, when is a guy like John Tavares ever available in the NHL? No team ever lets a guy like that go to free agency, and those guys usually get locked up.
I'm with you, but not for 10 years.
But a guy like this?
10 years, $300 million, those deals never work out.
Well, because obviously you're regretting the last 3 years of the deal, last 4 years of the deal, just like the Maple Leafs will regret the last 3 years of the Tavares deal.
But
you're not doing it for the last few years. You're doing it for the first ones.
But we say that, and then it turns out you're regretting the last 6 years of the deal.
I know that there's been a correction. That's what I started with. There's been a correction when it comes to these kind of contracts where you're seeing less and less of this type of commitment to players. But the question was, is he worth it? And I'm saying you can make the argument that he is worth it, but it all depends on your situation. I do think he's worth, if, you know, the Mets don't do this kind of stuff, but that's the kind of guy the Mets need, especially in this market. The Mets need this. a guy like him, because he, they, I mean, he is, Cespedes can't be what he is. Robinson Cano can't be what Bryce Harper is. Not just, and don't tell me on the field. I'm talking about everything, the whole thing, all encompassing. Because you don't trade, you don't give max deals to guys just for what they do inside the lines. You don't. Nobody does. And when you do, that's bad business. Not a max deal. Not one of those super contracts. You can't do that. So that's the argument. If there's going to be any more of these insanely large contracts in baseball, especially with the luxury tax threshold now, I mean, how many players are left that you would give them to? This might be one of them. How rare is it a guy like this is going to be available in the open market?
The Dave Rothenberg Show on 98.7 ESPN.